Good morning or good evening, wherever you're listening from. This week in AI and coding, Anthropic dropped a new model, the benchmark wars got messier, and the gap between what's impressive and what's actually useful in production remained stubbornly wide. Let's start with the obvious. Claude Opus 4.8 was the dominant story this week, covered in exhaustive detail across nearly every channel worth watching. The headline numbers: S2E Bench Pro climbs from 64 to 69%. The fast mode is now 3 times cheaper than before, and the price stays the same as Opus 4.0. Anthropic also shipped a 244-page model card, which several creators, AI Explained World of AI, Nate Herc among them, actually read, which is more than can be said for most of us. The two features getting the most attention are Dynamic Workflows and Ultra Code Mode. Dynamic Workflows let you orchestrate thousands of parallel sub-agents, not dozens, thousands. Which sounds extraordinary until you realize what that does to your token bill. Nate Herc is pretty direct about this. Ultra Code Mode activates workflows automatically, and if you're not paying close attention to your effort level settings, you can burn through an alarming amount of tokens doing things that didn't necessarily require that level of firepower. Mark Kashef demonstrated a genuinely impressive use case, a due diligence report synthesized from over 70 documents produced in 20 to 30 minutes, and frames it as a breakthrough for legal and compliance workflows. That's a real claim with a real demo behind it. The six-legged robot simulation from a single prompt, which AI MIT Arnie highlighted, is the kind of thing that photographs well for thumbnails but tells you less about day-to-day utility. Now the honest assessment. World of AI puts it well. Opus 4.8 is solid, not revolutionary. Theo from T3.gg reports that the model is genuinely more honest and more thorough than its predecessor. Fewer sycophantic hedges, more direct answers. But he also ran into hallucinations and CLI issues in actual use. That gap between benchmark performance and production behavior is the recurring theme of this entire week. The benchmark picture itself is genuinely complicated. On SWE Bench Pro, Opus 4.8 wins. On the new Deep SWE benchmark, which Melvinks argues is a more realistic measure because it uses complex, multi-step software engineering tasks rather than cleaner, isolated problems. GPT 5.5 scores 70% against Claude Opus 4.7's 54%. Melvinks ran his own direct code comparison between Opus 4.8 and GPT 5.5 and called it for Opus 4.8. But then also said GPT 5.5 dominates on Deep SWE. These are not contradictory findings, so much as they are a reminder that which model is better is almost always the wrong question. Better at what, under what conditions, at what cost? Nate Herc spent 100 hours comparing Claude Code and OpenAI Codex directly, which is the kind of empirical commitment that produces genuinely useful conclusions. His verdict: Claude Code is stronger on front-end work and complex planning tasks. Codex is better at research-heavy tasks and is more token efficient. Theo has largely shifted his own workflow toward GPT 5.5 and Codex, citing the more generous usage limits on the $200 plan and the ability to code remotely without interruption. He's using CodeRabbit and Macroscope for code reviews alongside that. Neither of these people is being tribal about it, which is refreshing. Theo also flagged Cursor's Composer 2.5 from Codium as a surprisingly fast and cost-effective alternative to both GPT 5.5 and Opus 4.7. The interesting detail there is the compute partnership with SpaceX AI, which apparently gives Codium access to meaningful GPU resources. Melvinks looked at Google's Anti-Gravity 2.0, their Codex-adjacent coding agent, and was not kind, functional, but a weak copy, unstable IDE, and Gemini's coding performance simply isn't competitive at the top end right now. Which brings us to Google, more broadly. Gemini 3.5, Flash was the main model announcement from Google I.O. this week, and the consensus across multiple channels is that it's underwhelming, more expensive than its predecessor, weaker at coding than Opus 4.7 or GPT 5.5. Gemini Omni is more interesting as a concept, multimodal video editing via chat commands, letting you change terrain, lighting, convert sketches to video, currently limited to AI-generated footage, which is a meaningful caveat, but the direction is clear. Kyle Balmer's read on Google I.O. overall was that the more important story isn't any individual model, but Google's strategic decision to integrate generative AI directly into search, which is genuinely an existential question for their core business. And they seem to be answering it by cannibalizing themselves before someone else does. There are also leaks worth noting. World of AI showed what appear to be early outputs from Claude Mythos, Anthropic's unreleased flagship, including a Python-generated visualization of a Saturn spacecraft and a solution to Erdos Problem 90 that was apparently reviewed by a Harvard mathematician. Whether those outputs are authentic is hard to verify, but Anthropic seems to be targeting a trimmed-down Mythos release within the next 3 months, and there are signs of GPT 5.6 in the pipeline at OpenAI, expected in June, with improved multi-step reasoning and agent workflows. On the financial side, Theo published a video this week analyzing what appears to be Anthropic's surprising path to profitability. The argument is that their multi-cloud strategy, available on AWS, Google Cloud, and Azure, rather than being primarily tied to one provider the way OpenAI is to Azure, gives them distribution advantages that translate into revenue. Combined with the usage spike that followed the Opus 4.5 release, the numbers apparently work. It's an interesting structural point. Being the second largest model provider might actually be a better business position than being the most talked about one. Moving to the local and open source side of things, Tim Karambat at Anything LLM spent time this week with Prism ML's Bonsai image models, built on Black Forest Labs' Flux 2 Klein 4B. The ternary model variant, the interesting one, requires only 3.7 gigabytes instead of 13, and outperforms both the binary version and the quantized Olimar version on image quality. Karambat is honest that it's not ready for integration into Anything LLM yet, but the direction is promising. Local image generation has been the ugly stepchild of local AI for a while, and this feels like genuine progress even if it's not there yet. World of AI connected Hermes Agent with Free DeepSeek V4 as a fully open source agent stack, which is a meaningful combination for anyone who wants serious agentic capability without ongoing API costs. Hermes itself had a significant update this week, the V0.15 Velocity update, with tool search that loads progressively to manage context window usage, an agent swarm system for parallel subtasks, and a codebase that was slimmed from 16,000 lines to 3,800. That last number is worth pausing on. A 76% reduction in codebase size is either a sign of serious engineering discipline or a sign that the earlier version had serious problems, probably some of both. World of AI also introduced OpenHuman as a competitor, a GPL-3 licensed desktop agent with local SES SQLite storage, 118+ integrations, including Gmail, Slack, and GitHub, and the ability to join and transcribe Google Meet calls. The local-first angle is the differentiator there. Colmadine introduced the concept of harness engineering this week, which is a useful framing. The distinction he draws is between optimizing what happens within a single AI session versus orchestrating multiple sessions into a larger workflow. He demonstrates this with the Ralph Loop tool, which automates multi-session coordination. He also showed his open-source tool Archon integrated with Jira, so that each ticket spawns its own agent conversation with a 12-step planning and implementation workflow. This is the kind of infrastructure thinking that separates people building toys from people building systems. On the Claude Code tutorial side, Leon Van Zyl had two complimentary videos this week. One is genuinely beginner-friendly. Claude Code, Superbase, and Hostingshare for a habit tracking app with full deployment. The other is more advanced, using Excalidraw architecture diagrams, parallel security audits, and the loop function for continuous UI iteration. Both are practical and grounded. Tech with Tim went through six Claude Code skills worth knowing. The G-Stack from Y Combinator's Gary Tan, Firecrawl for web scraping, Composio for tool management, and a Vibe security skill for vulnerability checking before deployment. Ben AI added 12 plugins to that conversation with the Caveman plugin, which compresses text by up to 75%, and the Printing Press, which gives you over 50 pre-built CLIs for software without public APIs, standing out as the most immediately practical. Matt Pocock tested a thermonuclear code review skill from the Cursor community against the last five pull requests of his open source project, Sandcastle. The skill found real structural problems. Files that were too large, missing abstractions, duplicated code, his criticism. The skill is too long and repetitive and lacks guidance on tests and feedback loops. He recommends a more focused version. He also published a companion video on 9 common mistakes people make with his Grill Me and Grill with Docs skills, which function as planning replacements. The recurring errors are predictable but worth naming: scope too large, passive behavior toward the agent, using a model that isn't strong enough for the task. These aren't beginner mistakes, incidentally. They're the kind of thing experienced practitioners still get wrong. Nate B. Jones had a strong week analytically. His piece on agent analytics used a striking example: a Cursor agent that deleted a production database in 9 seconds. His point isn't that AI agents are dangerous exactly, it's that traditional click and session analytics are completely inadequate for understanding what agents are doing. He proposes 3 tracking events: when an agent run starts, when a task completes, and when a user corrects the agent mid-run. That third one is the interesting one, because corrections are where you learn what the agent misunderstood. He also covered Shopify's internal coding agent River, and the design decision to run all agent interactions in public Slack channels rather than private windows. The argument is that this creates organizational learning. Junior people can see how senior people work with AI, and the institutional knowledge doesn't stay locked in individual chat histories. It's a simple idea, and probably underused. His infrastructure piece is worth a few minutes of your time if you're thinking about AI at scale. The argument is that Microsoft's planned $190 billion in data center investment doesn't actually solve the capacity problem, because the real bottlenecks aren't GPUs, they're high bandwidth memory, chip packaging, power delivery, cooling, and the physical pace at which you can build data centers. He argues that AI sales contracts are going to need explicit capacity and allocation terms going forward because the supply chain constraints are physical and not easily solved with money alone. Tim Karambat made a related point in a rant about data center projects in Louisiana, expressing skepticism about both the SPAN concept, server racks on private property, and the announced projects from Applied Digital and Meta in terms of their actual transparency and feasibility. A few things near the end of the week that are worth a quick mention. Sebastian Dubois released version 4 of his Obsidian starter kit, which now includes a full AI assistant system, a receptionist agent that routes to specialized agents for productivity, health, books, and identity. The identity system stores your work style and values so the AI has personalized context. It's inspired by Andre Karpathy's idea of LLM wikis, markdown knowledge bases that the AI itself helps organize and extend. Connection to Claude happens via a plugin called Claudian. Bart Sloditschka showed how Claude's co-work mode, not the chat interface, the project-based one, can fully automate repetitive tasks like email filtering and task creation in ClickUp once you give it persistent projects and clear instructions. On the broader industry and society side, the Everlast AI format had two substantive conversations. One with Emmanuel Birminghaus was a frank look at Germany's competitive position against China in chemicals, machinery and automotive, energy costs, regulatory density, and a cultural resistance to technology adoption named as the main obstacles. The other discussed OpenAI's five AGI development stages and the employment implications, up to and including the 100% unemployment hypothesis if AI becomes superior across all domains. Kyle Balmer's take on this is more grounded and probably more useful. Jobs don't disappear overnight. Individual tasks within jobs become automated, and the distinction between exposed tasks, invoice reconciliation, reporting, and defensible ones, client relationships, judgment calls, is where people should focus their attention. Demes Hassabis, as summarized by the iGrid, lands somewhere in the middle. Current systems are powerful enough to reshape industries, but they don't yet have the reliability and cognitive breadth that genuine AGI would require. The Onyx Security interview on No Priors is worth flagging if you work in enterprise AI. Maxim Kogan describes building AI agents that monitor other AI agents in real time. The company was inspired by early AutoGPT experiments and is now focused on the fastest growing category of enterprise AI risk, which is autonomous coding agents. The idea of AI watching AI is one of those things that sounds recursive and slightly absurd until you think about the database deletion story from earlier, and then it sounds like basic risk management. What ties this week together, I think, is a tension that keeps surfacing in different forms. The models are getting genuinely better. Opus 4.8 is more honest, more thorough, more capable of sustained autonomous work than its predecessor. The infrastructure for running agents at scale is maturing, from dynamic workflows to harness engineering to agent swarm systems. And yet, the gap between what these systems can do in a controlled demo and what they reliably do in production remains real and consequential. A 9-second database deletion, hallucinations in CLI workflows, benchmark results that diverge depending on which benchmark you choose to believe. The people doing the most useful work right now seem to be the ones who hold both things simultaneously. Genuine enthusiasm for what these tools can do, and a clear-eyed accounting of where they still fail. That's not a pessimistic position. It's just an accurate one.